Yeah, I call it the ingredients, right? I didn't get into coaching to win games, right? And I always, and it's funny, I say that, and every time I tell coaches, they're like, oh, gosh. But in reality, my thing is to make young men better. And I think the reason why we have found success is because those ingredients we've made sure are top-notch, right? So instead of saying, hey, we're waiting for the cake to be good, we focus on the ingredients. So when the ingredients are top-notch, then the actual cake will be good. And cake is winning.
Welcome to the Spartan Up podcast with Joe DeSena, founder and CEO of Spartan Race.
We are talking about overcoming obstacles. The same way we teach people to get over obstacles on the course, we will teach you here on the Spartan Up podcast to get over obstacles in your mind.
This episode of Spartan Up is brought to you by Duralane, a single injection that may provide up to 6 months relief from osteoarthritis knee pain. Risks can include general knee pain and pain at the injection site. You can see full prescribing information at Duralane.com.
Joe DeSena here, CEO, founder of Spartan. For the Spartan Up podcast, I got two buddies of mine, Frank McKinney and Thomas Morgan. They've got a new film coming out called Scrum that basically depicts Frank's journey. Frank is doing the unimaginable. He's got this school that had no rugby team, no diversity, and his lifelong mission was to get some diversity out on the field and create a winning rugby team. I don't want to ruin the movie, but to say he's had some challenges would be an understatement. So welcome, guys. Here we go. And we are talking rugby and resilience. Is that fair, guys? Rugby and resilience, is that a fair way to describe this?
Perfect.
Yeah, I agree.
The crazy thing is, Tom and I met in Singapore, I think at a rugby practice for the kids?
Yeah, our kids were both trying rugby for the first time, and we were the only two parents who didn't know anything about rugby.
We didn't know anything about rugby, and then I hadn't heard from Thomas in a while, and he hit me up, and he said, I got a bad story for you. This guy, Frank McKinney, is doing something that's never been done before. He's taken a bunch of kids, never played rugby before, and he's turning them into champions, and it is a Spartan story through and through. And so you made a movie about it.
Yeah, you know, I don't think we started out trying to make a movie. You know, I just said to Frank, I said, you know, you're making this amazing run. Why don't you let me come down and I'll record some stuff, and you can use it to try to recruit new players. And then I went down there, and then I started hearing the stories of these kids and where they came from, and the fact that, you know, one kid was the mascot at the school and the rest had wrestled but had never played rugby, and here they are like making this amazing run at the national championship. And I was like, holy shit, man, like we have to tell this story. And I think even, you know, Frank and I had these conversations. He's like, you're going to make a movie about me? Like, there's nothing interesting about this. And then as we got into it, he's like, well, maybe there is something here. So, you know, 2 years later, we have a movie.
Well, for those of you that don't know that are listening, and then Frank, we're going to give you the mic here. But Thomas has made, how many movies have you made?
I don't know. A bunch. 10?
I mean, 20, 30, 40?
Yeah.
Thomas has made a ton of movies. I got to know him pretty well after that first meeting at a rugby field in a very hot Singapore. And so no wonder this is going to be an amazing story for those that take time to watch it. So, but Frank, tell us your story. Tell us what we're going to, you know, those that are willing to dive in and watch this movie, what are we going to see?
So the first part I want to start off with, you know, Thomas and I have been friends for a long time. And most of Thomas's movies are in areas that are a little, I would say, scary. You know, he's got Nepal, which has some issues. I think he's in another war-torn country. And I think to myself, he's always said, you know, if I don't have a chance of, you know, bodily harm, then I don't want to make the movie. And that's what he had told me. And he said, hey, you know, I think you might have a story. Now, first of all, Joe, I'm a coach, right? I'm a coach. There's a lot of coaches in the country. I mean, I think to myself, how am I interesting? I'm just a coach. And Thomas came to me and said, hey, here are all the reasons why I think this is an interesting story. And he told me all the interesting reasons. And I said, you know, I'm still a coach. Like, I feel like I'm a coach. And coaching to me has been a calling. It's been this thing that somebody said, hey, this is what I think you're good at. This is what I think you can excel at. And this is what I think you'd have fun at. And I, you know, one of the things that really, you know, I liked when I saw your story Joe, is when you were a stockbroker, you took the Series 7. Those are all the things I did. But it's interesting, when I got into coaching, I walked out in the field and there's a bunch of young men around me. You know, you start getting this feeling like I'm in the right place. So what Thomas came to me and said, hey, you have a diverse team. That is something I've wanted all my life, is to have a diverse rugby team. I played rugby for many years, and I would rarely see any African-American people, any Asian people, any people that had any type of color. I would rarely see them. And when I saw them, I was like, hey, hey, and we'd become friends. And I just had this goal in my mind where I wanted to put a diverse team together to go out in the field every Saturday and compete and go out there and play for the guy next to you, no matter what color you were, no matter what your socioeconomic level was, whatever it was. And to me, that was just something I thought was the right thing to do and what worked. And Thomas is like, that's a story. And I said,
but,
you know.
But in fairness, not to take anything away from it, my other introduction to rugby was in Fiji.
Okay.
And Fijians are diverse, and they are the best rugby players in the world, right?
No, you're right. And if you look at the English national team, you look at the South African national team, all diverse. But rugby in the U.S., right? Rugby in the U.S., if you go to a rugby tournament in the U.S., right, I don't think some of the tournaments that I go to are very diverse, right? It's becoming more diverse as time goes on. But to me in the U.S., right, I don't think we've caught on that when you put guys together and they have a common goal of going out and fighting for each other, right, then they'll do a lot better on the field. You're right. In New Zealand, it's the national team. It's the national sport. South Africa, it's probably the second biggest sport. If you look at all these countries, when you watch them on tape, they're all diverse. They're different guys, different backgrounds. In the U.S., though, in my opinion, I don't think the same thing comes through. So my team, as you watch the movie, you'll see my team play a lot of teams that are not very diverse.
That makes sense. That makes sense. Thomas, when you dug in and you watched this thing play out, how heart-wrenching, like, were the stories just unbelievable, the individual players that Frank was recruiting?
Yeah, I think, you know, first, let me back up. When Frank says, you know, you know, I go places that I could be, and the quote was, you know, if I can't be killed or arrested, I'm probably not interested.
But, that was it.
That was true here too. I mean, I felt like I could have been killed in, you know, Jersey City, New Jersey. I felt like, I mean, some of these places were maybe as scary as Beirut, you know. So, but I think, you know, as you dug in, I think one thing as a coach, Frank sees and hears these stories, and he starts telling me these stories, and you have one perception of what that story is. But as we started filming them, even Frank was like, "Holy shit." And I had no idea that this was what it looked like. I had no idea that this is what the situation was. You know, when a mother says, you know, her only child, I want him to go far away from here because I know that he doesn't have a chance here. There's no opportunity for him here. And I don't want him to be killed and I don't want him to be on the streets. You know, like those kind of stories, like suddenly they start to resonate. And I think even, you know, going through that, I think it changed the way that Frank saw some of these kids as well. Like he knew he was giving them an opportunity, but he didn't realize how big that opportunity was, not just for those kids, but for their families. And I think that was really, like, this was make or break for a lot of families. If our child can get an education, you know, it could change the trajectory of our family for years. So I think that really kind of hit home to me. And then I think later showing some of those clips to Frank, I think it changed a lot of things for him as well.
You rugby was going when you joined the school. They already had a whole program going or no?
No, no. I started the team roughly 4.5 years ago.
And so there were no rugby players.
None, zero. And the school was probably 65 to 70% women when I started. So I couldn't go out and hand out pamphlets and bring people in and say, "Hey, come join the rugby team."
And so challenging to say the least. And the neighborhood, tough neighborhood where the school is?
So the school is in a multi-million dollar neighborhood. It's in a, you can go a mile north, south, east, west, maybe say half mile to three quarters of a mile. And there are million dollar houses around the school.
And predominantly white school.
So what made it challenging was the way you approached this new sport at the school.
Yeah, so to be honest, I mean, if you really, I mean, the school, I mean, let's do a little math here. The school's $54,000 a year. That's tuition, room, board, fees, everything. $54,000 a year. So that isn't attainable to a lot of people in America, right? So to be able to bring in a diverse team and be able to bring people that were on free and reduced lunch in high school into this, you know, type of thing is a challenge. The good thing is I'm a finance major. I've got a master's in business administration, right? I like math problems, and I'm also not going to stop until I get a team that's diverse. And diverse isn't, for me, diversity just isn't about the color of skin, right? It's also about socioeconomics. It's also about different parts of the world. So when you look at the team, when I walk out there and look at them, I'm happy because I see guys that are different that are going to be brothers forever, right? They're going to be brothers because they've gone through tough practices. They've gone through tough games. They've won games. They've lost games. But they know what's inside the guy across the huddle.
So rugby's a pretty – I mean, Thomas and I, when we first sat out in that field in Singapore, it's pretty rugged sport. I mean, it is as resilient as it comes. And so for the kids that you're recruiting from these tough socioeconomic backgrounds, is it like a joke when it comes – like is it no big deal versus people maybe that come from a little better background?
Yeah, I don't think that's really – I mean, my analogy is dogs, right? What type of dog do you have inside you? And I had a guy who's a 6'8 guy on our team, and I said, you know, you're a dog that's a border collie that gets three meals a day that sits in the air conditioner. And I tell the players the kind of dog I need is the dog that's in the junkyard with the tire swing and the old Roy dog food, and he has a little bit of water. I said, you don't want to put your hand through that fence. But the border collie, you'll put your hand through the fence and pet. So I tell the kids, no matter where they come from, I need junkyard dogs out there playing. That's for us to be successful, for us to win, you've got to be a junkyard dog on the field, in the classroom, and in life.
But I also think what was interesting is these kids, when you're playing for everything, you know, when that gives you your education, when there is no plan B, like they will play like crazy. There is no giving up, you know. And I think that, you know, that changed the dynamic of the team, because there are some kids that were there that came and paid full boat and were on the team, and suddenly they had to compete at a level with kids who were playing, you know, with a completely different mindset, and they had to be able to compete with these kids who were willing to leave everything out there and hurt themselves and, you know, really just endure so much to just, you know, make the team. So I think it kind of changed everything.
But that's that whole fighting for milk, right, analogy, right? Are you fighting for milk or not? And so it sounds like a bunch of the players you found, the more diverse players, are fighting for milk. But here's a question for you, because this is what we dive into on the Spartan side. Are you able to take some of the border collies and turn them into wolves?
Yeah, I feel like we are. And the reason why is because when you're in an environment with high-functioning people, right? So we're trying to create high-functioning individuals in the classroom as citizens and on the field, right? They help mold these other guys to work harder, to be stronger. You know, we're in the middle of preseason right now. And, you know, we had a situation where a young man during preseason decided he wanted to go out and miss a training session. Now, we had this happen. It happens every year, right? And it just the conversation is pretty easy. I mean, practice is not a right, right? It's a privilege. So these other individuals are helping mold these young men, right? Saying, hey, this is what I've gone through in my struggles, and now I'm a better person, right? I'm working harder. I'm sacrificing. And I'll be honest, not everybody makes it. And when you watch the movie, you know, you'll see all these from the amount, how much it costs from the school, from dealing with all these different things. You'll see this in the movie, and that's why it's really compelling. You see the challenges these young men have. When they come in as a freshman, you'll see the challenges of, you know, the school, the stuff we deal with the school, playing teams, competing, all that stuff you'll see in the movie.
Do the kids that are that you're basically navigating, getting them on the team and in the school, correct?
Yeah, so something you'll also see is that just getting in the school, right, paying for it. So some have government, they have Pell Grants, what are called Pell Grants, which is money from the government. They have loans, they have scholarship from rugby. you know, they have all these things and they've got to have that paid every year. And if the school goes up in cost, right, that's a challenge. And I text Thomas every now and then, because sometimes you just get to this point where you're just like, man, I've got to get some more money for these next two kids just to keep them in school. I mean, I have it this year. And I kind of got away from it a little bit because, you know, the summer came, you know, but now we're right back on it. I'm at financial aid or on the phone with financial aid all the time because I have to keep these kids in school so they can get a degree and walk across the stage.
That's the cool story that you probably saw, Thomas, right? Was here's this really prestigious, awesome, expensive school. And Frank is somehow given these kids, these diverse kids with tougher backgrounds, this great opportunity. And then what does it look like when you put the border collies with kids that are fighting for milk together on a team? You know, that's interesting. I guess that's the movie.
Yeah, I think the other part that Frank doesn't like to talk about, but I find really fascinating, is this road has not been easy for him either. You know, that school didn't necessarily embrace what he was doing or how he was doing it. And they didn't necessarily embrace, like, this is what my rugby team is going to look like. You know, like, there's a reporter in the film that says, you know, some of these kids didn't fit the mold of Queen's University, you know. And I think, like, that also was, like, you know, Frank took a lot of heat. He had people who came up to him right after he got the job and said, you know, I told the dean of students, you're not qualified for the job. Not based on what he had done, but based on, you know, a lot of other factors, one including color of his skin. And he's one of the only African-American rugby coaches, college rugby coaches in the country. So, you know, after the game, when the coach walks past him but shakes the white assistant coach's hand, like that in front of your team, like that does something to you. But it also speaks to that team, like how do you conduct yourself in those situations? Because you're going to have those situations in your life. And I think, like, all of that kind of comes out as well. And I think it's, you know, it's one thing to say, oh, look what he's done for these kids. But it's definitely not been easy for Frank personally either. And I think that's the one thing he always kind of glosses over, is like, you win a national championship, you get your budget cut. You win a national championship, you get your salary cut. You know, you do all of these kind of things and the cuts just keep coming because, you know, like we don't value necessarily what you're doing, and some people don't agree with it. So I think that's been even after the film was done, I think that's been a big part of Frank's story as well. But the resilience to keep going and saying, no, I'm going to keep doing this until you accept it, like, that is fascinating to me.
And that's where purpose comes in, right, Frank? You've got a true north, which you described happened way before you took over this initiative, and so no amount of money, no amount of obstacles get in your way when you've got this purpose, right? And it's much bigger than you.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. Probably about 10 years ago, I had been coaching for a couple of years, and I said to myself, when I die, I want to have given more than I've taken in life, right? So when you think about that statement, I want to have given more than I've taken, right? So yeah. Thomas is right. I mean, there's days where you sit here and go, I got better things to do. Like, it's just, you know, the school, you know, you would think, you know, the school would look at all these great things and say, hey, this is great, all the stuff you're doing. And you know, we don't get that. But that's not why I'm in coaching. I don't want a ticker tape parade. I don't want a pat on the back. When these kids graduate, that's my reward. The kids that I've been in financial aid every year, I'm trying to get them to get their bills paid, to help them get their bills paid. When they walk across the stage, to me, that's the victory right there.
But I will also say, going back to that, because I was going to mention this point earlier, you're talking about these kids. Frank finds out after Jared, who's in the film, after he graduates, Frank's talking to Jared and finds out, wait, graduates 3-9 in accounting and goes to work for Deloitte, right, from Jersey City. Frank finds out afterwards he never owned any books because he didn't have any money. So he would borrow the money, he would borrow books, he would rent books, or he would look stuff up online. All 4 years, never owned a book because he couldn't afford it. And it's like, holy shit, man, like, where does that come from, right? Like, I think it's all of this is, you know, that you talk about purpose and you talk about resilience and you talk about passion. Like, it really, I think that's what Frank gives them is like, we're not going to quit. And that's not just on the field. You know, Frank will show up at these kids giving presentations because he knows nobody else is going to show up. You know, he knows no one else is going to be there for him the way that he's going to be there for him. So it kind of takes on this parenting role as well. And because of that, I think he does shield a lot of his team from a lot of the shit that he goes through because it's not easy. You know, it's not easy.
So two couple of questions. One is, what would you tell the other coaches across the country, no matter what sport they're involved in, where they're having a tough time, or maybe they don't have as challenging a time as you have after what you've been through, but you did take it to a national championship. You're up against all odds. What, you know, one or two things that you would tell the other 15, 18,000 coaches out there across all sports?
We'll be right back to this interview, but first a message from today's sponsor, Durolane. You know that knee pain can really slow you down. Sometimes that knee pain is due to osteoarthritis, a disease that affects some 14 million Americans. Learn about osteoarthritis knee pain and how to alleviate it at oaKneePainRelief.com. You'll find information there about non-surgical, non-opioid treatments for osteoarthritis knee pain that may help delay the need for knee surgery. One treatment you'll find there is Durolane, a single injection that may provide up to 6 months of relief from osteoarthritis knee pain. It's indicated for the treatment of mild to moderate osteoarthritis knee pain when conservative treatments have not worked. Risks can include general knee pain and pain at the injection site. Full prescribing information is at Durolane.com. Spartans say no to limits. You can learn more at oaKneePainRelief.com. That's oaKneePainRelief.com. All right, back to the interview.
So two couple of questions. One is, what would you tell the other coaches across the country, no matter what sport they're involved in, where they're having a tough time, or maybe they don't have as challenging a time as you have after what you've been through, but you did take it to a national championship, you're up against all odds. What, you know, one or two things that you would tell the other 15, 18,000 coaches out there across all sports?
Yeah, I think first and foremost, you know, one of the things that we really harp on here is time, right? Being on time sounds like such a small thing. But the way we have our program set up, our guys get here 15 minutes early and they do what are called work-ons. So work-ons are anything that you're not good at, right? They come here, if it's passing the ball, kicking the ball, whatever it is, they're here 15 minutes early, they're outside and they're working on their work-ons. So there's no like, hey, if practice is at 4, you're getting there at 3:58. That's not on. You're there at 3:45 and you're working on your work-ons. So by the time practice starts, you're dialed in. So being on time is mandatory. Like, you have to be on time. Now, we have guys that may have jobs or a test or something like that. School is obviously first. But being on time is the first thing I would tell them. The second thing I would tell any coach, right, is school has to be number one. And it's funny because that sounds, when I say that to you guys, you go, oh, that makes sense. But there are a lot of coaches that could really care less what a young man is doing in school, young man or young woman is doing in school. But sports are only going to last for a finite amount of time, right? Where an education can last you for forever, right? So for me, the two things, time and making sure school, it's student-athlete. There's a reason why it's student and then athlete, right? But I know a lot of coaches that could care less. I'm almost positive out of our roster of 43 players, probably 70 to 80% of them, I can tell you what their high school GPA is within probably 0.2, and I can tell you what their current GPA is within 0.2. Last year, I could probably do a lot higher percentage. As our roster gets bigger, it gets a little tougher. But school is that important because I know that is going to last them for a long time. Winning a rugby game only lasts for that moment.
I will say one other thing that I thought was really incredible, Joe, is when I was talking to Frank, the very first interview we did is – you know, he said they had a coaches meeting, and one of the questions was, you know, you have your best player, and he's does something wrong or late for the bus or whatever. What do you do? And Frank was the first one to say, he sits the bench, like that's it, like he doesn't play. Like he said, I'm not here to win games. Like that's not what I'm here for. And I think it's like that construct of like, all of those things that you build, the result is the winning of the game. And correct me if I'm wrong, Frank, but like it seems to me like the result is the winning of the game, but all of the rest of the preparation seems like it's much bigger and more important than the game itself.
Yeah, I call it the ingredients, right? I didn't get into coaching to win games. right? And I always, and it's funny, I say that, and every time I tell coaches, they're like, oh gosh, but in reality, my thing is to make young men better, and that's from learning life lessons, being on time, opening doors for women, opening doors for anybody who's behind you, but mostly women, being a gentleman, being showing up to class early, making sure you introduce yourself to your professor, all those things, well, things that will last you for a long time. And I think the reason why we have found success is because those ingredients we've made sure are top-notch, right? So instead of saying, hey, we're waiting for the cake to be good, we focus on the ingredients. So when the ingredients are top-notch, then the actual cake will be good. And cake is winning.
I like that. What would you tell the regular mom and pops out there like me that are just trying to be a little better in life, right? Just a little more resilience, get off the couch a little more. Like watching these kids that are fighting for milk and navigating this whole thing you've got to navigate. What tips would you give us?
So I think it goes back to what Tom was talking about. So in the movie, you'll see Jared, his nickname is Pac-Man. So Pac comes from Jersey City, right? And you'll see this in the movie, rough neighborhood. And he shared with me, and Tom brought this up, that he didn't own one textbook in 4 years. Now let's think about that, right? You went to a 4-year school that's very competitive. You never owned a textbook. You never rented a textbook. You rented two textbooks, right? You're an accounting major, and you graduated with a 3.9 GPA. So when you think of tough, when you think of impossible, when you think of guys that are going to be a CEO, right? That challenge right there. I mean, I think about it, I went to undergrad and grad school, not owning a book. So what he did is, and he explained to me what he did. He rented two textbooks. He shared a textbook. He would screen. He would take pictures of people's textbooks. He would borrow textbooks. He would look up online, and he would do all those things to help him to succeed. And he spent 4 years and busted his hump doing that. Now, it's interesting. He had a person close to him who was in our program, had similar obstacles, and you know has didn't make it right in school because he just didn't have the dog inside of him. We all have the dog inside of us. It's just can you pull that dog out to be successful in life? And Pac is going to be a CEO. So your question is, you know, what would my suggestion be to people that are parents or that are on the couch that need motivation, right? What you got to ask yourself, what type of dog do you have in you?
I love it. I love it. I think that's the name of this podcast. What kind of dog do you have in you? Hey, Frank, you've got a pretty difficult job recruiting. You're recruiting folks that have never played rugby before, might or might not get into your school. What do you look for? What's that attribute or list of attributes you go after?
Good question. So you'll see in the movie, we call him Coach T, which is Tyree. Tyree is taking over most of our recruiting. So the face-to-face, the meetings, he does the front end. I sit down and work with him on how much we give in scholarships and how we get Pell Grants and all that stuff. But really, and he talks about this in the movie, you know, I'm looking for three things. Good citizen, good in the classroom, good on the field. So if you're not good in rugby and never played rugby, we have multiple wrestlers out here, right? If you work hard, and you'll see Marshall, who's in the movie. Marshall, and this doesn't show in the movie, but stayed after 30 minutes to an hour every single practice working on throwing the ball in. His position has to throw a ball in, and he worked on it and would stay after. So I need good citizen, right? Because I can't have guys that are tearing the school up. You know, they have to be good citizens. Now, sometimes they may be borderline citizens, and then we have to go in, you know, and in our environment, they'll become better. But, you know, I go look at their social media. We talk to teachers. You know, moms always want to tell you, my son is great. My son is great. But that's, you can't get a job recommendation from your mom. So we don't really take reservations or take recommendations from moms. But, yeah, good citizen. And then somebody in the classroom, in terms of being good in the classroom, you know, not all of our guys are great in the classroom, right? But they've got to be able to work. They've got to be able to get tutoring. They've got to be able to put time. So if a person comes in and they're going out every night, you know, one, it's going to show on the field, and two, it's going to show in their grades. So we make sure they show up to class. So when we go out and recruit, we're looking for good citizens, good in the classroom, good on the field.
Not only that, but you know this. I remember I got it from the West Point wrestling coach. He said, you know, like, the room doesn't rise to the level of your expectations. It falls to the level of your tolerance. So if you don't have good citizens, right, if you don't have good – the other kids are going to get dragged down with those anchors. So that's awesome. And then Thomas, this film, you didn't go the traditional route. You had the big offers, the big money, Hollywood, the lights, but you turned all that down to do this unique thing.
We had some offers. They weren't big offers, but we had some offers. But I think, you know, I look at the way film is right now, and it's different, right? Like, these bigger platforms are running film. The independent film festivals are run by Netflix, Hulu, and Amazon. You go there, you see all of those, you know. And so they're going with the algorithm that's tried and true. Put a celebrity in it, or make it something that's about, you know, the headlines in the newspaper right now. And so, you know, they gave an offer, and they, you know, basically the woman said, you know, like, where else are you going to take it? And that to me was a challenge. Like, okay, well, let's see where else we can take it. So we decided, you know, kind of in step with what we've done in the past, is like, could we use the film to benefit nonprofits? There's so many nonprofits that are really pushing all of the attributes that are in this film, and that means so much to their organization, that have just been, you know, absolutely decimated during COVID. So if we let them use the film so that people can download it, watch the film, and 40% goes to their nonprofit, 20% goes to Frank's Camps, 20% goes to keeping the platform up, and 20% helps me recoup, could we create this model of, you know, something completely different? And you know, I'm surprised at how many people this film has resonated with, from the NAACP to, you know, World Rugby now that's going to push it out, to USA Rugby, to the Spartan, which gives us the time on this platform, and hopefully we get, you know, an opportunity to push it out to benefit Spartan kids, because it's that same kind of work, you know, it's that same kind of diligence that there are people all over the country and coaches all over the country, you know, putting in every day. So I think, like, this platform feels like it will make sense for us. And, you know, it doesn't say that we won't someday sell it back to a Netflix or a Hulu or Amazon, but the fact that it makes people engage with a nonprofit, maybe for the first time, see what they're about on their way in to watch the movie, just feels, it feels right. And it seems to really match kind of the spirit of this film.
I love it. I love the creative thinking. I knew you were a genius when I met you in Singapore on that field.
Yeah, and by the way, I don't remember how good your son was, Joe, but my son sucked at rugby.
No, my boys were okay, but we won't go down that rabbit hole. All right, you guys are awesome. Frank, you're doing God's work. Thomas, you are, as usual, amazing. You're living where, out in Utah now?
Yeah, Salt Lake.
Salt Lake. So I got to come out and see you. We got all three of us got to get together. Thanks. How do people find, what do they Google, or how do they find us?
Yeah, so if you go on scrummovie.com or on Instagram or TikTok, it's Scrum Film, you know, and we'll give updates, but we'll premiere in October in LA and in New York, and then it'll come out through various, also, just as a side note, the film has been option for a scripted feature, and those details will probably come out in the middle of the month. So that's pretty exciting. Like, Frank will be played by someone more attractive and smarter. But
I'm going with Denzel Washington, Frank.
But yeah, it's an exciting time. So just you know, if they follow on social media, they'll see it, and hopefully we can keep you updated on Spartan as well.
I love it.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Spartan Up Podcast. Spartan Up is your partner in resilience for mind, body, and spirit. We're here 3 days every week. Do you know someone who needs a little nudge? Maybe they could use some motivation, tactics to be stronger, healthier, happier, more successful. Tell them about our show. And if you're watching on YouTube, leave us a comment. We want to know who's watching and who's listening. Thanks. See you next time. This episode of Spartan Up is brought to you by Duralane, a single injection that may provide up to 6 months' relief from osteoarthritis knee pain. Risks can include general knee pain and pain at the injection site. You can see full prescribing information at Duralane.com.